Steven, we need to tell people about Nice Games Club, our game development podcast.
Okay.
You know, the one where we talk programming and design, but also how games fit in our culture?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Mark, what else can we say?
How about how we
have more than 400 episodes in the archives? We've interviewed folks behind Monkey Island,
Baba Is You,
Opus Magnum,
and more.
If you say so.
But you two also make games, right?
Speak for yourself, Lydia, but also yes.
So we don't just talk about the industry, we also talk about the games we're making.
Yep,
that's it.
Nice Games Club. Listen at nicegames.club or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I was sitting at his drums, and Mark, all of the musicians in Reba's band were looking at me. I couldn't even breathe. I was like, oh my God, I can't drum to this song. I've only done it by myself.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
All right, here we are back again, you and I, another episode of Story and Craft. Thanks for stopping back by, and if this is your very first episode, welcome. Glad to have you here. Today, we are sitting down with the talented actor Rex Lynn. Just a long, illustrious career going back to Cliffhanger with Stallone back in the day. But more recently, like CSI Miami, Better Call Saul, Young Sheldon. Now he's doing his thing on Happy's Place on NBC and Peacock, along with his real-life fiancée, Reba McEntire. We talk about that, as well as just a really interesting life arc to get him to where he is and all the cool experiences he's had. Just a cool dude. Really enjoy the sit down with him, and I think you will as well. He's just kind of a chill, fun guy. Hey, do me a favor, if you would, grab your podcast app. Make sure to follow Story and Craft. New episode comes out, you get that notification. And of course, like the show. Leave a comment. Helps people find Story and Craft. And if you want to know more about the show, past episodes, past guests, get on the newsletter. It is so easy. Just go to storyandcraftpod.com. It's all right there. Okay, so let's get after it. Today is Rex Lynn Day, right here on Story and Craft.
So you're in Nashville, or?
Yeah, just actually Leaper's Fork. It's a cool little village just south, 20 minutes south of Nashville. And that's where we got a little, I call it a ranch. Reba called it a farm. But I said, we're not farmers. She said, well, we don't have any cattle. And I just bought two Texas Longhorn steers. So now we run two steers, and that makes us a ranch officially.
You know, it's so funny. A good friend of mine used to work for Fidelity Investments, and they got a big campus in Texas. And from what I understand, they have cattle on their campus because it gives them some kind of a tax break or something like that. And only in Texas, because I'm not buying any Fidelity Investment stakes or anything. But I see somewhere you are from Texas originally, right?
I am. I grew up in a little town called Spearman, Texas, population 2,700 when I left in 1969. It's a little bitty town north of Amarillo, right in the middle of nowhere. And
oh my goodness, you are out there, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great place to grow up, though, until I was 12. And then we moved to Oklahoma City. So I spent most of my early adult life in Oklahoma City, but born and raised in the Panhandle of Texas.
For a Texan making a trip across the Red River, I mean, did they need your passport to do that? Or, I mean, that's a big stretch.
It's funny you should bring that up. We're Texas Longhorns, so my parents went to University of Texas. My brother, I was born doing the hook 'em horns sign coming out of the womb. So I was psychologically scarred from an early age. And so when we moved when I was 12, Oklahoma City is the epicenter of University of Oklahoma Sooners. It was not a good place to be wearing burnt orange and white. I even, in high school, when I would score a touchdown, I played at receiver, tight end. I'd score a touchdown. I'd do the hook 'em horns, and then my own teammates would boo me. They go, dude, don't do the hook 'em horns. We're in Oklahoma, man. So, yeah, it's a tough place to be a Longhorn fan there.
You had to be very conflicted when you went to the Cotton Bowl, you know, kind of that one time a year.
I was never conflicted. Always burnt orange, baby. Burnt orange and white. Yeah, have you gone to that game? At the Cotton Bowl?
I never have. I try to stay away from Fair Park right about that. I guess they don't still do it there. They do it over at Jerry World, don't they? Cowboys Stadium,
no,
now, don't they?
No, it's still in the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, they have not moved from that venue. They have other games, like Texas A&M goes in there and plays. They have other huge games scheduled over there, but no, we're still in the Cotton Bowl.
You went to UT also, correct?
I did not. That's a whole nother story, but I'll use reductionism, as my dad used to say. I went to school in high school in Oklahoma City. I was going to Texas for sure. No doubt about it. My brother was already there. And Mark, I made a terrible mistake. I fell in love my senior year, and I followed her to Oklahoma State University. And so that's where I went to college. Of course, I had burnt orange. I had burnt orange on about every other day at Oklahoma State. But she dumped me once I got there, and I ended up I was going to transfer after my freshman year, and I made friends, and I just stayed there. So I actually graduated from Oklahoma State.
What was your realm of study when you were up there?
I studied. Well, I first started in theater, and they wouldn't let me really. It was a tight-knit group in the theater school, in the drama department. So a buddy of mine called and said, why don't you just switch over to radio, television, and film? You've wanted to be an actor all your life. We're learning about the history of film and television and theater. And so I just transferred to that. So I graduated in radio, television, and film under the headline of broadcast journalism, I think is what it was.
So you said you always wanted to be an actor. Was this something that, even going back to school, were you a theater kid in high school?
No. You know what, Mark? I did one play in high school, and I got kicked out after the first night. It was Fiddler on the Roof, and it was a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night production. And I played one of the, like a drunk Russian that drinks the vodka and does the Russian dance, and there's a bunch of us. And we were told beforehand to be easy on the props and stuff. And I guess my adrenaline, I don't know what happened, but I tore the hell out of that stage. And my drama coach at the end of that night said, you need to direct your energies elsewhere. So that was my only theater experience. My influences, I became interested in acting as much as you can at 5 years old, between 5 and 7 years old, because and people think, because I'm from Texas, that, you know, John Wayne was a big influence. And I love Westerns and all that stuff, and I've been in a bunch of them. But what really excited me was Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, all the Universal monsters, Wolfman, Frankenstein, Dracula, Mummy. I was enamored with them. And when I was old enough, whatever age that was, my parents made me realize, they sat me down and said, listen, we just want you to know there is no Wolfman. That's a guy with a mask on, and they pay him, and he's an actor. He's called an actor. And I just didn't believe him at first. But then when I was old enough to realize that it was the case, I thought, could there be a better job than that? I don't think so. So that really got me started.
Because if you're a kid, that's what you're doing already. You know, you're already living in the land of not make believe, but you got an active imagination. You can, you know, you're like, I always, you know, because I coach voiceover, and I always tell my students, one of the things I did when I was a kid was, you know, I like playing fireman. My wagon was a fire truck. The hose was a fire hose. Garden hose was a fire hose. And you can intellectually know it's not, but it's like when you've bought in, I'm like, that's one of the things I always thought was kind of fun when you're an adult. And the few times I've done some acting stuff on film, it's like, oh, we're all adults, but we're doing a very kind of like kid-like thing in a way. You know, this is kind of fun, you know.
Well, the thing, too, is, I know you've got such a – man, I wish I had your voice. If I had your voice, Mark, I'd be making so much more money. The thing is, we were playing cowboys and Indians and all that stuff. But then my family, my mom's sister was the manager of the Disneyland Hotel in Santa Ana, California.
Okay.
We drove when I was 10. We went to Disneyland, and they had a Wolfman mask, and my parents bought it for me. And so when I got back to Spearman, when everybody had their six guns and we were playing cowboys and all that stuff, I had a Wolfman mask on, and they were like, this guy's off the wall here. He's a little off. But I was always enamored with that. And I did puppets. I had puppet show. I had a whole bunch of puppets. So I went to our elementary school, and I went to different classes. I went from class to class, and I did puppet shows for the different classes, which were, some of them were good and some of them were terrible.
What I think is interesting is, you know, people, you know, like you said, Texas thinking, okay, it's Westerns and whatnot. But no, I think it's the things that you watch on TV, that's, or a film, that's going to be the thing that kind of fires up your imagination. When you were growing up, what were kind of your Mount Rushmore actors or projects that just really sparked your imagination as you got, when you started thinking, I want to do this thing seriously. I really want to dive in. What was kind of pulling you along?
Well, that's a two-part answer. First of all, Adam West and Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger, Adam West, Batman, when they came on the scene in 1967, I was all about it. I just wanted to be the Lone Ranger. And then Batman came out, I wanted to be Batman. So those two guys were, at an early age, were very influential for me. I even got to meet Adam West many, really? Many years later and told him that he was one of my influences and one of my idols. And we had a long discussion, and we never brought up Batman, and I didn't want to. So when he referred to Batman, he said the series. He talked about his career, and then he goes, and then the series came along, and then after the series. So it was really a great thing to talk to him, and I didn't walk up to him and say, Mr. West, I love Batman. I just decided not to do that. We just talked about our past and stuff, and it was great. So early on, it was Clayton Moore, it was the Lone Ranger and Batman. But in high school, in the month of November in 1975, I walked in the Continental Movie Theater, which was the best movie theater in the state of Oklahoma at the time. And I watched what is still today my favorite movie of all time, and that's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And that's a hard movie to watch the first time. I walked out of it and got on a payphone and called Mom and said, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to miss dinner. I remember it was a bye week in football. I was a football player in high school, so we didn't have a game. And I went back in the movie theater and bought it again and watched that movie back to back. And I told my parents the next day, based on Jack Nicholson's performance, I knew for sure this is what I wanted to do. And that, so I would say Clayton Moore and Adam West early on, and Jack Nicholson in 1975 really planted the seed for me to see what I could do to move forward in that.
What were your folks thinking when you said this is going to be my thing? The bugs bit me. Were they like, all right, well, go for it? Or were they like, were they thinking you were on a different track of going somewhere else?
No, they were completely supportive, and they knew because I'd been talking. You know, I couldn't stop talking about the Wolfman early on and about who's the guy that's plays him. I was talking about acting all my life. So when I came home and then Saturday, I said, I got to do it. And their first reaction was, well, you're going to have to start studying and get into theater, get into acting. And I don't know how you're going to do it, but you know, you need to figure that out. Well, it's hard to do in Oklahoma City. And so I graduated from Oklahoma State and I went into banking. I don't know why, but I started banking. I was a banker. I didn't move to California until I was 34.
So, really? Okay.
Yeah. I was 34. And so I worked for a bank, and there came a time in my life, which was 1989, where I sold my house. The market was terrible. Lost a lot of money on my house.
What year again was this?
89.
Was that, I'm trying to think, when was the big oil bust? That kind of, that was 82. Right. 82. Okay. All right.
Funny you should bring that up. I was working at Penn Square Bank, which was the infamous bank in the shopping mall that almost brought down the five major banks in the United States. There were books written on it. The bank was called Penn Square Bank. Anyway, and then I worked for another bank after that. But 89, I had broken up with my girlfriend. The company I worked for was declared insolvent. They basically left the company. They were bought out by another company. So I was unemployed. I didn't have a girl. My girlfriend broke up with me, and my dad said, you know, if there's ever a time to move, it's now. And you can't keep talking about acting in Oklahoma City. You got to move to New York or you got to go to Los Angeles. That planted the serious seed. I sold my house, packed everything up, and on February 5th, I put all my stuff in a U-Haul and got on I-40 West and didn't know anybody, and headed to California to study.
The question is, when all this was going on, was this already something on your mind, or did your father kind of like, did he kind of pull that to the front of mind for you?
It was already on my mind, heavily on my mind. But I tell you, Mark, fear is a terrible thing, isn't it? I was afraid to go. First of all, honestly, I didn't know any better. And I thought, since I'm bald, I'm not going to, because everybody's supposed to, you're supposed to look like Tom Cruise. And I thought, I can't, I mean, the chances of me going out there at 34, pretty slim, working, especially, I thought, you know, I'm the way I look is not Tom Cruise or whatever in my head, whatever actor I had in my head. So I was scared to death to go. And plus, I didn't know anybody. And so, and that's a big move to get in a U-Haul and go out there. But I decided it was time. My dad told me, if you're going to go, you better commit 110% and you better give yourself a time frame. And he's right. He said, because you're, if you go out there and you don't give it 110%, you're going to have to more than likely come back to Oklahoma City and you're going to have to live with yourself then. So you should go out, give it 110%, set a time limit. So I set a time limit of 5 years, which is really not long enough. And I moved, and I was lucky enough. And I was out there a year and a half. I was lucky enough to get my first movie, which was Cliffhanger, which turned out to be the number one movie in the country. John Lithgow and I played the two bad guys. It was Stallone was the lead.
People forget John Lithgow played a few really good bad guys. You know,
he's one of the best bad guys ever. As a matter of fact, we just got back from watching his play. If he doesn't get the Tony Award, they shouldn't give it out. We saw his play Giant. And man, oh man, is he ever amazing in that. But yeah, so John and I were cast as the bad guys, and Stallone was the lead, and it was called Cliffhanger. So I was only out there a year and a half of acting class. I didn't even have an agent. I had one when I finally got Cliffhanger. I had just gotten an agent, and they put me on a trial basis for 6 months, and I auditioned for that movie. Then the movie went away for whatever reason, and then it came back, and they read me for a bigger role, and I ended up getting it. So I spent the next 6 months in Italy filming Cliffhanger, and so then that's how that started.
Well, going back a little bit now, what were your folks, what was their vocation, you know, when you were coming up?
My dad was a lawyer, a trial attorney. Mom was a housewife, and a great mom. And, mom was the disc jockey at University of Texas on the campus. So she was already in radio.
They do have a really good radio television film department down there. In fact, if not mistaken, isn't Matthew McConaughey kind of wired into the ecosystem down there a little bit? Yeah.
He's moved himself into a good position down there.
He's kind of like the unofficial mascot. He's kind of pushing Bevo out the way a little bit, I think.
A little bit. Yeah, he sure has. But no, their department down there is fantastic. Yeah, it really is. And, mom and dad were, I mean, they were so supportive at first. And then, you know, and dad was a trial attorney. I watched him in court.
Well, that's theatrical.
He was unbelievable in court. I mean, he had some amazing clients and he was an entertainer in his own right in the courtroom, although it was real life. It was for people's lives were at stake. But and then mom was a disc jockey at Texas. And so I've kind of had that. And dad paid his way through law school playing the trumpet. He was in a jazz band. So there's a lot of music in the background. And I always wanted to, because mom kept talking about, you know, I was the voice at University of Texas on the campus. It made me always want to be a disc jockey. Always. I had that in my mind too.
Well, that's an era when you grew up back when radio was, I try to tell my kids, you know, daddy used to be cool once upon a time. You know, I used to have some pretty big radio shows but they don't look at radio as the thing that, like, when we grew up, that it was a, you know, it could be a cultural thing. Like, I remember going to high school, everybody listened to the same morning show, or like, you know, the first thing that really bit me the bug is watching American Graffiti and Wolfman Jack. And
I was just going to say Wolfman Jack was my influence in radio. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. That and Dr. Demento. I don't know. It was like, because it was theater of the mind. It was like what was possible. And I just remember him eating that popsicle going, oh man, I don't know, man. I don't know where that guy is. You know, when Richard Dreyfuss is asking him about it, and then he'd have the corner of his eye sees him turn into the guy on the radio. And so to me, there was a lot of magic to it. And I had a chance to, you know, when I I started at 17 at a very young age, and I was always the young guy, so it was easy to be a sponge, you know.
Yeah.
But now, now I, you know, I try to tell my kids, and they're like, "Oh, radio, that thing when Spotify doesn't work, that's okay," you know, that kind of thing. So,
Man, Jack, by any chance?
No, but you know, the thing is, there was a radio station I was working for. It was a top 40 station, and I left to go somewhere else in Dallas. And they flipped it to country, oldies. And they brought in Wolfman Jack to do mornings for the first month. So I got a chance to hear him doing mornings. And this is when he was up in years, you know, and I was a big fan of, you know, guys that were big into West Coast radio or like East Coast. There was a little different stylistic kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I was always West Coast. You know, for me, I remember one of the first things as a child, you know, Disco Duck, Rick Dees, you know, that kind of.
Yeah.
But radio for me, I was always enamored from, like you talk about, being, you know, acting. For me at 7 years old, I was like, I want to do radio. I was such a nerd about it, though. It was so, but your mother was doing that thing. So did she do it beyond college, or was she kind of
my parents, she met Dad when he got in law school, and the rest is history on that. I think she graduated, and then she wasn't she didn't pursue it after that. She was a mom after that.
Hey, I'm Andy from the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Our show is pretty simple. 5 lifelong friends competing on a single topic to see who gets bragging rights. Each episode, Nick, Scott, Brian, Kelly, and I battle through 10 questions on movies, music, science, history, sports, whatever we decide to throw in the blender for that week. Every episode stands on its own, so you can jump in wherever your curiosity takes you. And we don't just stop at right or wrong. We get into the backstory, the origins, the weird facts, and the stuff that has you saying, "How did I not know that already?" So download an episode, play along, keep score, and tell us how you do. See if you can beat the crew on the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Now, did you have any brothers or sisters around the house?
Yeah. I've got an older brother and an older sister, and they both live in Oklahoma City now. My sister went to Tulsa for the first part of her married life, stayed there for years, and then moved to Oklahoma City. My brother went to Dallas, stayed there for years, and then came back to Oklahoma City. So that's where they are.
I got you. Well, you know, I left Dallas. Spent about 20 years in New Orleans, and I'm kind of in and out of Southern California. But now I'm down in South Padre. I'm on the Eternal Spring Break program, you know.
So. Oh my God, I didn't know you were in Padre. Oh my, I'm about to have some flashbacks, baby.
You know, there's a big beach bar down here, the biggest one in Texas. And my daughter bartends during the summer. You know, when spring break was happening, I was like, man, I remember the days like Stevie Ray Vaughan was on the beach doing his thing. And now it's a whole different thing. And it was like you had a lot of kids here, but nobody was mischievous, like in a bad way. Times changed a little bit, but there's still the vestiges of that. And I, you know, it is kind of cool to be here and be a fly on the wall with all the kids here for spring break, especially they do UT. They do the first, actually, I think the first week of spring break is when all the Texas schools are on, you know, they're not, you got Texas and you got Tech and everybody else. So, you know, I live vicariously through them.
Well, that whole 5-state area, I mean, Oklahoma City, when we went, everybody in Oklahoma went to Padre Island. I mean, that was a must every spring break. And then we would, of course, accidentally sneak down to Matamoros.
I was about to say Matamoros.
We crossed the border. And we thought we were so cool by doing that, you know. But
yeah, going down to Mexico, I don't know if it's as big of a thing now. It's a little bit precarious of a thing to do, you know.
Yeah.
But you came down here. So you still had your Texas connection, even though you were in Oklahoma.
I had relatives down in Brownwood. My mom was born in Ranger. So there's a lot of, I had a lot of relatives in South Texas. But Corpus Christi and Padre Island was a huge part of my life, man. I mean, every spring, I mean, that's the thing, 4 springs in a row. And then college, two of the spring breaks of college I went to there. So I spent a lot of time down there.
You're probably out at, let's see, like Louis's Backyard, I think was the, I don't even know if that was around back then.
No, I think it was, yeah.
The thing to do though, what's neat about this island, and it's still the same as where you head north and when the road just ends, and then you head out to the beach and you just keep driving north on the beach and you're just nothing but sand dunes. I told my daughter, we got to do that, but I don't have a four-wheel drive and I don't want to be that guy, you know, who goes out there in two-wheel drive. He just can't get out, you know?
I just got to tell you a quick story. I'm a drummer. I played drums when I was a kid. My mom got me a snare, mom and dad. And I'm not a good drummer. I'm just an amateur drummer. But I was trying to impress the girl that I really wanted to date. I was in love with her. She was not in love with me. She was the high school head cheerleader. I was captain of the football team. She was a senior. I was a junior. We went down. Well, the whole class went down to Padre Island. Well, at this bar, I met the drummer in the afternoon, and he had a set of congas. And he said, hey, if you want a drum, just come on in and let's get together. And I said, all right. So that night, I knew all the girls were going to be there, and I knew this head cheerleader was going to be there. And he let me get up on the congas, and he let me play for a couple of hours. And I just improvised, and I broke my thumb. I didn't have any tape on my thumb. And I was, of course, there were a few beers involved. And I was up there just going at it and going at it for 2 hours. And that night, my right thumb got, it was huge. And I kept, of course, I didn't really feel anything at that time, but the next day I felt a lot. And I went to the emergency room. And
you wonder if high school girls knew how much effort we put into stuff.
I'm telling you, man. And she wasn't even impressed. I broke my thumb for her and that didn't do any good.
You know, the percussion folks, they're the foundation of all the music, but you know, the guitarists are all the ones who get the accolades. So are you still playing? Are you still musical?
Well, I am actually. For my 3 birthdays ago, so for my 66th birthday, Reba got me a set of Gresh drums. I hadn't played in 41 years, and I would always walk up to somebody's drums, and I don't know why I had this in my head for so long, but somebody told me a long time ago, you never play another guy's drums. You stay, don't get up there and hit on them or play them.
Right.
So I hadn't played in 41 years. On my birthday out here at the ranch, she said, let's go out in the barn. I want to show you something, some artwork. And I said, all right. So I went out there. She had members of her band were nice enough. They came out here and built a little 2-foot stage. And I got a pair of Brooklyn Series Gretsch drums, not a pair, a set of, I mean, professional. I got zildjian cymbals, a 2-4 tom-toms.
Really?
It was amazing. So we went in the barn and we were looking around and she goes, oh, look what they look over here in the corner. And they had lights coming down.
Oh, I so just, she had a whole theatrical thing, a presentation.
Oh, yeah, it was all set up. I just started bawling. I just started crying. And she goes, look, now you don't have to say you can't hit another man's drums. So just get after it because those are your drums.
Wow.
And so here's what I did. We had a band in the 6th grade in Spearman, Texas. We played 2 songs, Wipe Out and Louie Louie. Louie Louie is boring on the drums. So I got up there and I didn't know what to play. And I hadn't played in 41 years. And she said, just play the first song that you played that you can remember. So I just did that. So I did Wipe Out and
which is iconic, you know.
It is. I had so much fun doing it. It was great. So now you ask me if I play. I go out to that barn as much as I can, especially for therapy sessions, and I get my headphones on and listen to my favorite band or the Eagles. So I listen to Eagles and I'll play Eagles songs and that kind of thing.
Of course, Don Henley, another fellow Texan.
He is from Linden, Texas, and my favorite lyricist and drummer and singer of all time. And matter of fact, we just, Reba knows him well. They did a duet together. We just went to see the Eagles at the Sphere, and Don gave her a Don gave her a guitar with a little signed notes from all the Eagles members, and I was in heaven, of course.
Wow, that is so cool. That, you know, especially when you have somebody who knows kind of what your jam is, not, you know, literally jamming out, but like that thing that really kind of resonates with you. And then to have a kit that's all your own. I mean, it's funny because I've been watching lately. There's a couple of people I catch online that they're not really doing drumming lessons. It's got him like Estepari or he's some Spanish guy on YouTube. You just watch him. It's like, I'm not a drummer, but it just keeps floating up into my YouTube or my socials. And
that guy that does all those weird, he does everything. I mean, he's a great drummer, it looks like.
Yeah, he's got like a beard, and he's real kind of a buff guy. Yeah. I'm like watching, how does that guy do all that stuff?
Oh, I've watched him a lot. Yeah, he's brilliant.
When you watch someone who can do something effortlessly, even whether it be singing or playing an instrument, or those are the fun ones to watch. It's like, I don't know how they do it. They cracked some code. There's something in the DNA that, you know, and that guy definitely has. Now the question is, this is the big thing. Have you ever said to Reba, hey, kind of sit in?
Mark, I've got it on film. Here's the thing. One of her songs is Consider Me Gone was a huge hit for her. I like the song a lot, mainly because it would be easier to drum to if I were to do it. So I listened. I didn't tell her. I listened to Consider Me Gone probably 50 times and learned how to drum it the way her original drummer did. Well, she went on tour and I hung out, you know, I was the boyfriend that hung out for, followed her around for a few tour dates. And one day at soundcheck, Garth Justice, her drummer, who's a great drummer and a great guy, he called me, he went down there and he said, hey, come on up for soundcheck. We're going to play a little, he said something like, we're going to play a little Eagles or we're going to have fun and mess around. I said, great. So I went up there and they didn't tell Reba at first. And there's the band. Garth asked me to come up to the drums. I walked up to the drums and he said, go ahead and sit on my drums. And I said, no, dude, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. He said, no, sit on the drums for a minute. I'm going to take a picture of you. That's all he said. So I got on the drums and then he said, and now you're going to play Consider Me Gone. And Reba walks out on the stage and they start the song. And Reba just smiles at me. And so I got the drums.
Oh, so she was in on it. Yeah.
Yes. But I'm going to tell you, I didn't think she was, but I'm going to tell you this. To look that moment, that 2 or 3 seconds when I realized what was about to happen and I was sitting at his drums and Mark, all of the musicians in Reba's band were looking at me. I couldn't even breathe. I was like, oh my God, I can't drum to this song. I've only done it by myself. I can't do it. And I said, guys, here's the thing. And I just started blabbing. And then Reba walks out on the stage and they go, 1, 2. And Garth says, get going. And I had to start with a hi-hat, you know, and I just got into it, started it. It was one of the highlights of my life. I'm telling you, that's a long-winded answer to your question. But
no,
yes,
I got
one song on the stage.
That's fantastic. So now where was the venue? Where were y'all playing?
I don't remember, and I should remember it. I really think it was Little Rock, Arkansas, but I'm not sure. I wish I did. We had 17 cities we were going to. So she would, and we were filming at the time. Reba and I were filming Big Sky on ABC. We were in the same series together. She literally would film Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, get on the jet Thursday morning, fly to wherever, concert Thursday night. We would fly to the next town that night, Friday night concert, Saturday night concert. We'd get back to Albuquerque. We're filming in New Mexico. Get back to Albuquerque about 3 a.m, go to sleep, wake up, start rehearsing Sunday, and then she'd have a 5 a.m. call to film for the next 3 days. And she did that for about 8 or 9 weeks.
I never understood how people do that, because being on tour is different than going from one acting gig to the other. You know, it's like there's a physicality to it. So, you know, you got to have stamina to knock that out.
I don't know how she does it. And she does it without drugs. I mean, those days, I mean, the 70s, it was easy to figure out how they did that. But
yeah,
she's an amazing, amazing person. We were all in awe of how she did. Hell, I was exhausted and I wasn't even singing.
Speaking of Big Sky, I just spoke with Natalie Allen Lind. I think she was in Big Sky as well. Yeah. Now she's on that Dutton Ranch, which is, you know, I'm a big Taylor Sheridan fan. I really like what he's up to. I think he's a wonderful writer. And plus, he's kind of celebrating, kind of bringing production back to Texas, which we've never had that thing down in Texas. We've had fits and starts. You know, I did my, when I was a little kid, I did my, well, I have to tell you, you can appreciate this. Now, I don't want you to be too impressed here, but I was actually a child actor who was in the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders movie. It was an ABC movie of the week.
What?
it was a sequel, John Davidson, you know, from That's Incredible. Yeah, he was kind of the star in this one, but they shot it and I remember I was, eight, I think. And we were and Texie Waterman, who was she was the head of the, you know, cheerleader. She was the choreographer of the cheerleaders. She had a studio like in a strip shopping mall. And that they were shooting something out there and they had a break. They had flipped the cameras around or do something. And one of the cheerleaders they used the real cheerleaders. They had a birthday and they're like, "Hey, come on, we got some cake. Come on in here." I was at that one little like kid that they thought was really cute. So all the girls are sitting in a circle and they have me eating cake with them. And now 8-year-old me didn't appreciate it the way maybe 15-year-old me would have, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I figure I don't think you get too much more Texas. Well, it was in Dallas. I was I did some kind of scene where I walked through. I think I was an extra, you know, with Larry Hagman and everything. So,
yeah.
But Texas has never had that kind of level of production. I think it's long overdue because you can shoot literally everything in Texas. And that's one thing I like.
I've never understood it, except the fact that tax incentives come into play, I think, and all that. But for decades, it would be hard to beat a state better suited for film than Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You got
because you got everything. Yeah,
everything. You have everything there. And I think it's been coming around the last 10 years, 10, 15 years. A lot more productions coming through there.
I know, speaking of McConaughey, I know he's leaning in. You know, they had this whole thing. They're kind of pushing people to promote, you know, in Austin. God only knows what's going on in Austin. You never know. But, you know, in legislature, not in the city itself, but that Dutton Ranch, they shot that in Fort Worth, you know. So it's
again, my good friend Ed Harris is on it. And we watched two episodes, I guess. Now we've gotten two, I guess. One, is this Thursday or Friday? Friday. Have you seen the first two episodes?
I have. They sent me the first four to check out, and I just got an email last night. I got 5 through 8, I think. I'm power watching. It is, I got to tell you, you know, I never really watched Yellowstone. Everything else he's done, I just never really kind of locked in on Yellowstone for whatever reason, but everything else. And Landman, I think Billy Bob Thornton's is knocking that out of the park.
I love Landman. So you didn't really watch Yellowstone, but you're liking Dutton Ranch?
Yeah. When I talked to Natalie Allen Lind, I said, "Can you jump in midstream on this?" And she's like, "Absolutely." And I think you can, but I think there's a lot that gets missed. I'll circle back and I'll go through Yellowstone, but I kind of feel that's a big bite to take. You know, I watched all the prequel, you know, like with 1883 and and that was his writing. It's funny because you'll appreciate this. I spoke with Jim Lampley. We were talking and he said, "You know, he's got like a phone date once a week with Taylor Sheridan." I'm like, "Man, I am coveting this." I'm like, how cool is that? And one of the things I think you'll notice if you like watching all his stuff is, and I told Natalie this, I said, you know, if you look at everything he does, the underpinning, the foundation of the show is really strong women. If you really think about it, because you can't really easily crack the code on the politics. It's a very well-balanced, well-written, he does it from a kind of apolitical standpoint. I don't know how he can write all that stuff and have it all be a hit.
I don't either. I have no idea. I mean, he's got a lot of guys helping him and girls. I mean, he's got lots of writers helping him, but he is really, really impressive. And he's got a dynasty going, that's for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, we're talking about like at the beginning, you know, the things that grabbed you when you were young, the scary stuff, you know, or the monsters and all that. And then, you know, fast forward, now you're doing something comedy. And along the way, you've been kind of the bad guy. What is there anything that you feel it's like that broken in pair of tennis shoes or blue jeans? You can just kind of, it feels good for you or any genre that you love jumping into?
Well, I will say this. You mentioned the comedy. John Lithgow, who's one of my dearest friends, he did a comedy called Third Rock from the Sun, a sitcom. Mm-hmm. And he put me on it a couple of times. And he said, "Rex, if you ever get a chance to do a sitcom, two things will happen. One is they're going to be lucky to have you because you're one of the funniest dudes I've ever met, even though nobody ever gives you me has ever given me a chance to try to be funny. And he said, the other thing you're going to realize, it'll be the best job you will ever have. And he was right. Happy Place has been such a joy. And I tell you what, Mark, it's been intimidating because I was thrust into working with a bunch of sitcomers, people that are funny. Mm-hmm. Reba, Melissa Peterman, Melissa, Pablo, Takala hadn't done much sitcom, but I had to realize that, there's everything about timing, everything about what's on the page, and they changed the dialogue. I'm telling you, Lithgow told me, he said, now, Rex, one thing you better get used to, they will change that dialogue every 2 hours. it'll happen right up until you're filming in front of a live audience.
Well, the question I got is, how much improvisation have you found yourself doing, or do they encourage or discourage that at all?
They don't, neither. I mean, they don't encourage it, and they don't say don't do it. But if there's too much improv, it gets off course. But I don't try to improv that much, but I have a little bit, and it's made it fun. But the whole world of sitcom it's just a lot of fun, and we're having a lot of fun. And I learn from other actors, not just in sitcoms, but every day that I go to work, I try to pick something up from somebody, no matter what the age or what their status is. I've been stealing a lot of stuff from these actors.
Even the people you're stealing from have stolen and down the line. And I don't even know if it's stealing. I think it's really like finding that one thing that somebody does that connects with you. Like, okay, that makes sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
How long have you and Reba been together? Over how many years have you been together?
We've been together a little over 6 years.
When you're going to work with someone and coming home with that same person, is this like, boy, do we ever look at you like, okay, I got to not look at you for a little bit?
No, you know what? Honestly, this is not, I'm not trying to be campy here, but it doesn't really at all. We love to be around each other. It helps to be in love, but it really helps to like the person. And I genuinely like Reba. She's one of the most amazing human beings on the planet. So we find time to be serious at work and pay attention to work. We rehearse at home. I mean, when the sitcom is on, she can memorize dialogue in 1 minute on a page. I have to look at it for hours and hours.
You're like me. Yeah.
I'm a rehearsal freak. She's not. She doesn't have to really. But it's 24/7. So we really don't have time. It's just worked out great. We love waking up together and going to work together. We're around a bunch of people. We're not really totally engaged during the day. You know, I mean, she has scenes with other people. I've seen with her. Sometimes we don't even visit during the day, even though we're in the same space. But no, it's worked out great, Mark. It's just, we go home, we talk about the day, and then we have to rehearse for the next day. And
well, that sounds almost like if you can kind of carve out perfect, you know, be doing the thing you love with somebody you deeply care for. I think it also helps in the world of acting to be able to pick up and read and pay, because, you know, acting's reacting, as they say, but you can read kind of where someone's at and, you know, follow, you know, there's the unspoken.
I even rehearse so much, Mark, that it drives her. She'll just sometimes in the house, she'll look at me and before I even say anything, she'll go, no, we rehearsed all day long. I'm not rehearsing right now. I go, but we got some lines that were changed. Well, I saw them. We're good. No, let's rehearse. I'm not rehearsing, Rex. I'm done for tonight. And then I'll go rehearse by myself and it's worked out so far so good. We're getting ready to start August 12th. We're getting ready to start our third season. Very excited about it. We got some additional writers coming in. We got some guest stars that I can't mention that are coming in that are going to be a blast. Last season, we had Eric Stonestreet and Jane Lynch and Sherry O'Terry and Joanna Garcia and Steve Howey. We had a lot of great Christopher Lloyd. We had a lot of great guest stars that came in, but we're going to have some more coming in.
You're having a blast on this, obviously, but what is there something out there that you have, there's like, I want to, there is still a bucket list, if you will, of kind of projects or things you'd like to do. What's still out there for you that you would like to dive into?
Well, I would love, you're going to laugh at this, and it's not going to happen. Man, I'd love to play the Wolfman. Maybe the old father of the younger Wolfman in the woods or something, but in all seriousness, I would love to play. Well, I actually did. I wouldn't call it handicap, but a very challenging role. I just finished the second season of the new hit series, Apple TV series called Stick.
With with Owen Wilson and another Texas guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mark Maron. I think Mark Maron's knocking it out of the park on that show. Absolutely.
He is. And Timothy Oliphant. But I just did the second season, and I play a retired famous golf coach who has Alzheimer's. So I had to do a lot of research. They gave me about a month to prepare for that. And I had, man, what a brutal disease. And it was challenging for me because I just wanted to bring something to the table that, because everybody's affected by Alzheimer's indirectly.
Yeah, I think Mark Maron's father, I think even, was dealing with that.
Yeah. So, and I knew people, some of the actors, and were going to be looking at me like, how's he going to play this? But I worked hard at it. I wanted to just bring something to the party that was legitimate in the way that I portrayed the person with Alzheimer's, and I just wanted to do it the right way. And hopefully, for the most part, that happened. But to answer your question, I always said I would love to play a handicapped person or something challenging other than, you know, the normal thing. And, you know, people do it all the time. So I'd say bucket list wise, and I will say this also, I've been really lucky. I've gotten to play a lot of things that I wanted to play. So far so good. But if you see me on a poster as a Grandpa Wolfman, don't be shocked.
I'll be the first one in line to buy that ticket. I'll tell you that. Well, it's funny you mentioned Stick, Mariana Trevino. I don't know if you worked with her at all. She's actually from Monterey. I spoke with her and we talked about, she used to come up and you remember South Padre had that, I don't know if you remember that, there has a putt-putt golf course with a geodesic dome thing. And she remembers playing putt-putt there and they just tore it down. I'm like, why did y'all tear it down? It was kind of where all the kids, all of us feral 80s kids would, you know, find our way over to this putt-putt course and, you know, meet all the other kids from all the other condos. I always end up doing what I call my 7 questions, kind of on the back end of our chat, a little extra fun. And I always talk food at least once. And, you know, you're a fellow Texan.
Oh, good.
Well, actually, you know, before I ask you this first question of 7 questions, I'm going to ask you, okay, let's pretend like you're back in high school or, you know, you've been out with your friends. You know, you had one of those quintessential evenings, kind of like was illustrated in Dazed and Confused. You go out to the Moon Tower or whatever, but you're going to go to Whataburger afterwards. What are you ordering at Whataburger?
A double cheeseburger at Whataburger, but I'm ordering 2 of them.
Really?
Yeah. Or it was either water. I can't believe you brought that up because it's where we always went at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
But here's the other place we frequented at 3 a.m. Taco Bell. And I would always get 2 burrito supremes and 2 burrito supremes. They had something like a gordita. I would have 2 gorditas and 2 burrito supremes. That would be the 3 a.m. Whataburger and Taco Bell.
Yeah, Whataburger was always our post, you know, back in the day when nightclubs were a thing. Whataburger was always the jam, and that was and that's something my daughter gets done working, and that's the only thing open when she does when she works the weekends at the big beach bar here. So we'll go to Whataburger, and you know, and I'll do my.
When is the last time you had a Whataburger? I haven't had one in years.
About a month ago, I think, or something like that. Yep. They only got 1 on the island, And so we actually go drive across the bridge to Port Isabel, because when it's like spring break, there's a line that's at least an hour long. So we go across to, you know, the bridge to that Whataburger, and it's a lot faster, you know. So, but now, see, now I was talking food, because now I make myself hungry. It's about lunchtime. But well, the going back to the food thing, the first question I ask of my seven is, what is your favorite comfort food? That thing that you're having a great day, it makes it better. Or if you're having a crummy day, it kind of, you know, kind of lifts you up a little bit.
Well, that'd be two things. It's not comfort food, but it is to me. I'm a sushi freak. Mm-hmm. I started eating sushi in 1985 in Oklahoma City, when they first opened the sushi bar in Oklahoma City. Sushi is one of my favorite foods, but if I was going to, and I love to cook, I would have to say a really good chili with Hatch green chilies from New Mexico.
Yes. Okay, there you go. You're my people. Good. Yeah. But don't you love that time of year when it's about August. It was when they have the big Hatch chili. Everybody gets them, you know.
Oh, yeah. It starts in July. So the first harvest is in July, goes into August, then late harvest is September. And so those Hatch green chilies, they're not that hot in July. Mm-hmm. They get hotter in the end of August, and then late July or late harvest is in October. Into September, they get really hot then. So I would say Hatch green chilies in a chili. Of course, that's chili with no beans. Mm-hmm. And then, because I'm from Texas, and then another comfort would be pinto beans with Hatch green chilies. And I would have to have, maybe I smoke some pork shoulder and put the pork shoulder in the beans and the pinto beans and the Hatch green chilies and Texas sweet onions. So I would put that up there with my comfort.
Very good. Yeah, see, that's okay. You know, I'm just saying, if you ever make your way back down to South Padre, I'm going to put you to work, you know, because that sounds absolutely delicious. Now, the next question, if you're to sit down, you're going to have coffee, you and three people, you're going to be spending an afternoon just talking story. Now, living or not, who would those three people be that you would like sitting at your table?
Living or not, I would go... Well, you would almost have to, my parents are not with us anymore. I mean, you would almost feel obligated to say mom and dad, but I think if they're listening to me, they would say, no, you can't say that. We're actually got to pick somebody else.
We'll make it four people. And then your folks can be there. Cause
I'd love to have mom and dad there. Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to the, you know, this is so goofy, but man, I'd love to have talked to Clayton Moore and say, did you like playing the Lone Ranger? I mean, it would be probably Clayton Moore too. And there could be a list of 1,000 other people, but I'm going to go with my parents, Nicholson and Clayton Moore.
So the things as a kid, plus Lone Ranger back then, you only had three networks, you know, and so everything was so big, you know. So I think celebrities even elevated at some level, you know, they're almost mythical.
This is going to kill me too, because when we hang up from this all day long, I'm going to be thinking, I got to call Mark back because here are 10 other people that I could have. So yeah, anyway, I'm going with those four right now.
Very good. Very good. Now, going back to when you were a young guy, who was your very first celebrity crush?
Oh, there's no question about that. I was in love and wanted to marry immediately Elizabeth Montgomery on Bewitched.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, she was just like in the way she wiggled her nose and she, I was in love with that woman.
So funny. I never understood the switching of the husbands, you know, mid series.
I didn't like either one of them. I was jealous.
Well, yeah, of course we were jealous. Absolutely. Now, the next question I got for you. Now, if you're going to be living on an exotic island, somewhere you really want to be, you're going to be there a whole year, though. There's no streaming. So if you want music, you're going to have to bring one CD, and you're going to bring one movie on DVD that you can watch over and over and over again. What would that CD and what would that DVD be?
Without question, it would be One of These Nights by the Eagles, that record. And it would be... probably One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Very good. Be very good. Yeah. I haven't seen that in so long. It's one of the ones I want to revisit. You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day. I was like, you know, a lot of things I remember watching when I was young, just on TV, just a regular tube. Now I got the big 75-inch TV. I can revisit it and, you know, enjoy it.
Oh, you should, Mark. You know, they just had the 50th anniversary. I took the cast of Happy's Place, all the cast, four of whom had not seen. They were younger people, had not seen the movie. I bought all the tickets. I reserved two rows in the movie theater, and we got to sit down on the big 70-millimeter screen and watch Cuckoo's Nest. I was
wow.
It was great. And it was fun to look down the aisle to these younger actors that I've worked with on Happy's Place, and they were just mesmerized. I mean, they were just like, oh, my God, I didn't know this movie was like this.
You know, well, there's something about seeing it on the big screen. You know, that's why I'm excited about the Star Wars anniversary, is getting back into the theater and seeing, you know, part of remembering why you liked it so much.
Yeah.
Because it started in the theater. Yeah. Now, the next question, if you were to say from time you get up, time you go to bed, if you said this is a perfect day, what are the ingredients that went into to making that a perfect day for you?
Waking up would be the first one. Spending time with Reba and spending time on the phone, maybe with my family, eating a really good meal. You know, I'm a movie freak. I love the movie theater. I love it. I go 99% of the time by myself, not intentionally necessarily, but a lot of people don't go in the morning or middle of the day. It would be going to a good movie and then having a great dinner. Maybe being around an animal, whatever. I'm a dog freak. I love all animals. So I would have to include an animal in that day. And you know, that would be a pretty good day for me.
Very, very good. I'm a big dog guy also. So yeah. In fact, you'll appreciate this. I have a 2-year-old, very much an adolescent golden retriever. His name's Ranger. So, you know, had to keep it Texas.
Oh, that's great.
He's a sweetheart. He's our third golden. He's 2 years old and he's still got a lot of puppy in him, but he is extremely intelligent and he knows how to play me. Yeah, my 20-year-old daughter, she's upstairs and they're a team. There's a lot of mischief going on, that's all I'll say. But
you know, I've shown dogs since 1981. I used to show mastiffs. You know what a mastiff is?
Yeah, the big dogs.
Big English dog. And then later on in life, in the last 15 years, I've been showing French bulldogs, who ironically, that breed came from the Mastiff, but and I named all three of my French bulldogs have been pretty famous. The last one we had, it were no longer with us, was Riddler, and then the French bulldog before him was Joker, and then the French bulldog before him was Batman. So I've kept it in the Batman family, and I've had a great time with that breed. That breed's phenomenal too, and we've really got dog fever right now, so we're maybe thinking about checking.
Well, the dogs always keep me grounded. It's always, you know, it broke my heart. We had a golden who passed a few years ago and it just broke me up. And so it took, it was about a couple of years later. And then we got this little guy when we moved down the island. And at first he was out to the beach 2 seconds after we got, he loves the beach and he's a magnet for all the girls on the beach.
Of course. I've always told people this and I mean it. Dogs are important. I mean, they're important in life. I don't care. And it shocks me every time I meet somebody that doesn't care for dogs. I don't get that. I've never understood that, but they're important in this life and certainly important in mine.
I don't know. They keep you connected to, I don't know if it's, you know, it's parts of you that you access better when you have dogs around, you know, and it's a more complete life. I don't know. I mean, to sound philosophical, but you know,
No, I agree.
Well, the last two questions I got for you. Now, if you weren't doing this, if somebody said, you know, Rex, the whole doing the acting thing, this is just not available to you anymore. But what would be your number two that would bring you joy? That would be a vocation that would be your jam?
Well, I'd have to, can I give you two answers?
Sure.
One would be a veterinarian. I always wanted to either be an actor or a veterinarian. And I would say that or a professional drummer.
I was about to say drummer. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the thing is, if you're in Texas and you want to be a veterinarian, that means you probably have to end up going to A&M. And I don't know if that would really square up with your.
I would not do that. No. No, I'd go to Oklahoma State Vet School, where I'd go,
okay.
Way to go to Texas A&M.
Now, the last question I got, if you had that DeLorean, you could go back in time to when you're 16 years old and you got a few minutes with yourself. What piece of advice in that moment would you offer yourself to either make that moment of your life somehow a little bit a little bit better, a little easier, or to put you on a little bit different track, what would that piece of advice be?
Always be kind, no matter what. It's in this world, just be kind. And that's the advice that I would give myself. And also, don't worry about so much bullshit. You know, just don't worry about that, because a lot of it is not going to happen anyways. So, I mean, just be kind to people, be kind to yourself, and The rest of it will take care of itself.
I love that, because I think in the world we live in now, I think if everybody just, you know, dialed in a little empathy, and even if you don't understand, just be kind. That's kind of the thing I default Amen. Position I try to raise my kids to, is just be kind, you know, and do the right thing, whatever that is, you know, if I try to figure that out. But my friend, it's been such a pleasure. I've really enjoyed sitting down with you. This has been a blast. And I appreciate you sharing time with me. I really do. And
since you got the big 75-inch screen too, you got to go back and revisit Cuckoo's Nest, but you got to start watching. If you're not watching, you got to start watching Happy's Place.
You know, that is on the list, because I love Reba. I think she's in the same ecosystem with me as with Dolly, you know, You know, there's wisdom, there's kindness, there's that kind of genuine approach to life. I just adore her. So you're a lucky, lucky man, my friend.
I am. And do me one other favor, because I don't have one within 100 miles of here. Just go eat a Whataburger for me, will you, please?
You know, I'll do that, and I'll get a little picture of it, and I'll tag you on it, and I'll say, hey, this is – but I'll do a little – the French – Ranger, the Golden – he is a good boy. He will come sit next to me on the sofa, and he'll just sit there and wait. Oh, he waits for the French fries. I mean, he's you can get that dog to do anything with Whataburger French fries. So
of course you can.
But well, my friend, have yourself a wonderful one. I hope we have a chance to catch up down the line. And Happy's Place, I'm going to be power watching the first couple seasons here. And but best of luck to you, my friend.
Thank you, and I'll see you down the road, Mark. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go, Rex Lynn. That was a cool conversation. I like him. He's a cool dude. Just really enjoy. I want to go to Whataburger with him sometime. I think he's game. I think I can get him down here. for the amount of times Whataburger has been mentioned on this program, you know, I'm thinking sponsorship. That's all. I'm just throwing it out there. At least get me a chocolate strawberry shake. And just in case you haven't tried it and you live in Texas or you have access to a Whataburger, they'll mix it for you. It's so much better like that. As always, you can tell I haven't eaten yet. And don't forget to check Rex out, Happy's Place, NBC, and Peacock. And of course, Stick. I'm not sure when the new season's coming out. Season 2 with Owen Wilson and Marc Maron and Mariana Trevino. It's going to be, I don't know, sometime this year, probably. I'm not sure, but I'm looking forward to it on Apple TV. Okay, so I'm going to get on out of here. But before I do, I want to remind you real quick to grab your podcast app and like the show. Make sure to leave a comment. If you would, I would love that, because it helps people to find Story and Craft. Also, follow the show, because that way you get notifications every time a new episode comes out, and that way you don't miss anything. And of course, everything you could possibly want to know about the show, super simple. Just go to storyandcraftpod.com. Past guests, past episodes, it's all right there. Okay, I'm going to jump on out of here, but as I always say, thank you very much for making what I've got going on here part of what you've got going on. It does mean a lot to me, and I like the emails. Always just shoot me a note. Just go to the website. Like hearing from you. Okay, so you go have a great rest of your day. Great weekend if you're listening to this episode on the release day today, Friday. Go enjoy yourself. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.